My name is Darren Hupke, and this is Pixels and Polygons. Another week of the show, episode 23. This is the Jordan episode. It's all about basketball games and Michael Jordan and my love of everything he's done for the Chicago Bulls. No, I'm just kidding. Welcome to a new episode. This is an episode featuring just some returning guests, no first-time guests on this episode. We've got Andrew Elmore again and my good friend Austin. We get to speak about a cool question, I think, is for diehard fans of certain video game series and certain video game franchises. I ask, what is your least favorite game in one of your favorite game series? So being able to hear, you know, what the reasons are and, you know, what's that title that stands out that you didn't quite connect with as much. I know for me, like, even my least favorite game in a series is still in a favorite series is still a series or still a game that I like quite enjoy, and it'd still be one that I would replay, but yeah, there's just reasons why it's maybe at the bottom of the list and not at the top, but that's okay. So had some fun talking about that. So first part of it will be Andrew, and then after the break it'll be with Austin asking the same question. Other than that, same old things. I've got the Patreon to follow. Got some writings and some posts up on my newest book. I got the single player bonus podcast episode 5 just went live, where I break down my top 10-ish Sega Genesis games that I enjoy, which was coincidentally around the same time as the Genesis birthday, according to social media, that is. So you can follow along for a lot of that content for free. It literally is just a button you can click to follow for free and see a lot of the writings and things like that I do there to post and share. And then there are those paid tiers, like I said, where you get like the single player podcast and you get some additional inputs. You can even submit your own voice memos or just answer via text some of the icebreaker questions, and I'll share them and shout them out on future episodes. And then 32-bit Library Volume 4 will be live. And September 27th, that's when you'll be able to buy your copies if you did not do any like the Kickstarter stuff. I've made that the release date because it's the first day of the Portland Retro Gaming Expo. I'll be up there for that weekend, and so selling copies of the books, and that will be one of the books that I'll be selling. So I chose to make that the official release date for that. You can check out more of that on my website or on any of my social medias or on any of the other stuff. Basically, the Patreon again, because that's the umbrella for everything that I'm doing. So that's all I got. Enjoy the episode, and we'll catch you all next week. All right. Welcome to another episode of the show, Andrew. Welcome back.
Thank you so much. Boy, are my arms tired.
From what we were just talking about, what's going to be included in this, I want to make a comment, but I shan't do that. Welcome to the show again. It's always a good time chatting with you. I'm looking at my list of icebreakers I want to try and puzzle you with. Let's think about, so the last time we chatted, actually, I don't know what order this will be in, but, I asked what's your favorite video game currency, but let's flip that a little bit. What collectible would you need to find if your life was a video game? Have I asked you that one before?
Oh, I don't believe so.
So yeah, if your life was a video game, what is that thing you're collecting while you're platforming about or not platforming about?
Yeah. What are my Mario coins effectively?
Yeah.
You know, I was going to say instinctively guitar picks, but I have a on my desk here in a very cartoonish, what's the word I'm looking for? Self-parody is a replica Taito Game Center ashtray full of micro SD cards. So if I'm being honest with myself, that's probably the actual answer is a bunch of micro SD cards.
That's cool.
I feel like I'm constantly swapping these things in and out of various devices at all times.
Well, you're using that just for work / personal stuff, just all of the above?
Cameras, capture cards, various like devices like scalers and FPGA things and newer versions of older consoles or like messing with ODEs and stuff like that. Old computer things. I've got a bunch of like Windows 95 and 98 machines that instead of having old IDE hard drives in there, it's a series of converters that ends in a big old SD card. Cause it's just been a lot easier and a lot faster that way, to just transfer stuff back and forth. They get a little bit grumpy when you try to plug them into a modern network. So it's just been faster to do that. As opposed to trying to deal with like USB 1.1 port bus speeds or whatever. So if we want to keep it more on brand, we can call them Memory Stick Pro Duos. I had like 30 or something spares of those, and I finally just put them all in a Ziploc bag and shipped them to a friend on the other side of the country like last week.
That's funny. Yeah.
Here, you'll appreciate these.
Sony is such a proprietary company.
Oh man, yeah.
So strange.
That'd be a fun way to do it if we're making like a Eurojank platformer, like a Zool type thing. Just throw in a bunch of different types of, you got the Memory Stick Pro Duos, you got the M2 cards they used in the PSP Go, you got whatever they had in the Vita. I don't know. Just the original Memory Sticks that are, like 4 inches long.
Compact Flash, those like bigger brick ones.
Yeah, I got some Olympus XD cards in here before the SD standard was really adopted everywhere.
I remember that launch PS3, that had the little tray you can flip up, and it's like, oh yeah, look,
that thing. Yeah.
Hey, here's 4 slots for various external medias because this system is going to do everything for you. And yeah, never
like
use
right
those.
Right in that time, like 2006 being that perfect moment where it's like, not really sure which one of these formats for storage is going to be the market leader here in a year or two. Guess we're going to include all of them.
Yeah.
It's wild.
That's fun. Cool. All right. Well, that's interesting. So, yeah, it'll be... I still hope that it has some like medieval fantasy setting, so it just makes no sense that why you're collecting this technology, a lot of grass and forest and trees and things. Like, why are these like technology things around here?
Yeah, I brought them in the car. It's an Army of Darkness situation.
Yeah, there we go. Game writes itself. Okay, well, let's get into the main event then. This is a question that... Oh, yeah, I'll ask you this one, because we're rolling the dice here. You are... picking the just spin the barrel. Maybe not make that reference. You're just rolling the dice.
We're in the dice zone of Gunstar Heroes right here. We're picking it up. We're throwing it. It's bouncing off the walls. We're throwing each other at it.
What is your least favorite game in your favorite franchise? And again, I'll make sure this doesn't have to be like your favorite franchise, but what's a franchise that you enjoy and you've been a fan of, but what is your least favorite game in one of those?
Apparently I just use your show as a platform to paint gigantic targets on myself, but my answer for that one is Metal Gear Solid Peace Walker.
No, that cannot be your least favorite in Metal Gear.
I hate that game with my life.
This cannot be real. Like, that is one of my...
It's the realist, my friend.
Oh my gosh. Okay, well, that's why we're here to elaborate and discuss this. It's not just answering the question and signing off.
Exactly. You can't just drop that.
Yeah.
And just hang up the call and be like, all right.
And that was Andrew's last episode.
Asked and answered. Yeah, exactly. He was never heard from again.
Yeah, I'm curious to know, like what about that? So, I mean, maybe you don't have to say what your favorite one is, but what do you think are some... 2 is your favorite?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So then, yeah, what is it about Peace Walker that didn't hook you, that just didn't quite gel with what you were looking for and wasn't, the cream of your coffee? Whatever. Okay, I don't know what I'm saying.
But that word is a metaphor.
Peace Walker broke my heart by being Monster Hunter. Was the deal. I'm a big PSP fan. I thought Metal Gear Acid was interesting. I thought Acid 2 is damn near a masterpiece. I adore that game. I liked Portable Ops quite a bit. I like the work that Ryan Payton and team did over there on that one. And then we kind of reach a point around the late aughts where around like 2010-ish, I think it's kind of really the big peak where a lot of late PSP games, you start playing a dangerous game. If you don't already know what it is, it could be anything at all on the cover. It could look like any genre. You're flipping a coin, 50-50. You're going to fire that bad boy up. And as soon as you get out of the tutorial, it's a Monster Hunter.
Yeah. I mean, Soul Sacrifice was just awesome looking, like gothic, bloody slog is what it looked like. And then I went in and it was a 4-player cooperative level based monster fighter.
Oh yeah. Once you get into the Vita, it's all bets are off. You got your Freedom Wars and whatnot. It's just, it's all the way down. But, yeah, a lot of late PSP games, like Lord of Arcana and stuff like that. Just, you get into it a little bit and find out, oh no, they've made a Monster Hunter on me. And that was, I think they were able to elaborate enough on that structure to do some really cool stuff in Phantom Pain. Just because that game has so many other systems interacting, that mission structure works as a good way to drop you into an open world, but provide a lot of context and things for you to do. And Peace Walker just was not what I am looking for out of a Metal Gear game, I guess. It's not even that I necessarily think that it's bad or whatever. It's just like, it is a type of game that I just do not jive with. Like the repetition and the friction of waiting for meters to slowly go up and it being kind of organized and balanced on the assumption that I am a train commuter in Japan. And unfortunately, I am not. So that's not really something that I, you know, that's not like a local multiplayer network that I have access to, but, mm-hmm. you know, even aside from that stuff, it's just like, structurally just the game itself is just not like, it took all the, soldier Pokemon from Portable Ops and expanded that in a way that, again, I think, they got really deep into, in Phantom Pain, but, I think some of that stuff is neat. They're doing interesting things. I think the UI is gorgeous. I think in terms of tech art, it's a magnificent, astonishing accomplishment for the hardware. I don't ever want to play it again if I can avoid it.
Wow.
I played a good chunk of it on PSP, and then I played through all of it on PS3 when that Legacy Collection came out. And, I don't want to go back if I can avoid it. Hmm. We're not counting Metal Gear Survive because that's, I mean, whatever.
Yeah, but, that's fine.
Peace Walker is just also like kind of marks a point where a lot of the like story ties to like the ropes that need to connect MGS3 to like MSX Metal Gear 1 and 87 are holding up a bridge, and that bridge is the bridge from the William Friedkin movie, The Sorcerer. What is that, 77? Something like that. It's just, it's a very rickety, very dangerous bridge that I don't think is something you should drive a truck full of crates of nitroglycerin over. This metaphor is slipping away. I don't know. I think a lot of the narrative ties in that, like, gap and the stuff that kind of connects them gets really messy. Even as someone that loves all of the ridiculous spaghetti mess that is Metal Gear in its entirety, but I just think a lot of that starts to fall apart around Peace Walker. That kind of feels like the fulcrum to me, where that stuff just kind of started to crumble in a lot of weird ways. It's I mean, yeah, that's around where Kojima started to crank the misogyny knob back up a little bit more. We got Hot Coldman out of it, though. That's good. That is a phrase that will live in my... That will probably be the last thing uttered out of my mouth with my final breath on my deathbed someday. Just Hot Coldman. And then I'm gone forever.
Yeah,
that's my Rosebud. Hot Coldman is my Rosebud.
That's interesting. Yeah, I mean, I don't know why. So my Peace Walker exposure was pre any like Monster Hunter like attempts. I think I had like played a demo of like a Freedom Unite or whatever, one of the PSP ones. Like I think maybe I tried a demo, but like maybe didn't even like put enough time into like register like what like the loop of the game was or anything. I was like, oh yeah, I don't know, this seems like interesting, but I need to find some friends to play with and, you know, whatever. Yeah,
I think it took a long time for that to very slowly ramp up outside of, well, I mean, I guess just in America. I can only speak to that being in the US, but I feel like that took a long time to catch on.
Oh yeah.
And when it did, it exploded. But
yeah, well, Monster Hunter World, yeah, I did like, yeah, that I finally did jump on there and I absolutely loved that game. I've, you know, 200 and something hours into that, and like the only reason I stopped playing was because the people I was playing with all quit. I'm like, why are you guys bored of this? Like, this is still great. We're 200 and something hours in and we're fighting the same monsters. Let's continue to fight these same monsters, people. But like making that comparison to it, like obviously that's exactly what it was designed and inspired by, clearly, like the mission structure, the cooperative elements and everything. I think the biggest flaw of that, of Peace Walker, is the really like lack of like specialized boss battles or like, it's, you know, you're all fighting just different versions of like the AI like robot type things that are kind of bothering you. I really wish
that's just like a military vehicle. It's just, yeah, this boss fight is a tank.
Yeah,
there's not even a Vulcan Raven in it.
Yeah, so it's like, I if that had some of that in it, I would have loved it, like, you know, even more. And I had one of my good friends, like I had convinced him to play it with me, and so we used the, because again, I also don't live in Japan and commute to work on a train or anything.
What?
We used that PS3 ad hoc party, you know, app to like sync up and like play together. And I was like one of like, you know, five people using that probably. But we played a lot of it and we nearly finished it. And then he just like gave up on it. And I have dreamed of a day that I could go back and play like a modern version of that. Because of my addiction to Monster Hunter World, I thought like, yes, give me an updated version of that. But now it's Metal Gear. Like, yes, 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 I'll take all of that. But yeah, just, you know, hasn't, the stars haven't aligned. And obviously we shouldn't be getting a new Metal Gear game. Or if we do, it's, you know, not one that we probably want.
Yeah, I mean, they're putting Delta out relatively soon, right? That Snake Eater remake.
Yeah, but I'm worried about that one.
I don't know, man.
Well, the things I've read, I mean, I haven't dug too much into that one or anything, but from what I read, that they're using the original voice actors and everything, but it's just because they're original. You're using the original voice lines.
Mike just totally cut out.
Oh,
yeah. There you go.
Okay. But the voice actors, they're just using the original voice recordings. So, that to me, like from, like if I was a developer, they're like, obviously you can't change the game up much. Like the story and pacing of the game is going to probably fit within that framework of how that story is delivered. So, yeah. You know, I mean, it's just going to be a prettier version of an already good game that's already been re-released, that's already had HD versions of it and stuff like that. So, that being said, I'll still probably give it a shot and just, you know, see if I'll enjoy it. But, yeah, I don't know. I think the Metal Gear games that we wanted was that original like Metal Gear and Metal Gear 2 like remade in like the Fox engine would have been the best like send off thing, just to combine everything together in full 3D.
Maybe. I'm not sure how that would. I mean, you'd have to make a very different video game, I think, at that point. But yeah, I mean, like Snake Eater is a weird one because when that first shipped, it was a, you know, fixed cameras room by room, the same way that MGS 1 and 2 are. Mm-hmm. And then when they put the subsistence release out and all the subsequent releases of it have had you know, selectable full camera control. And a lot of the areas in Snake Eater were not really designed with that in mind. And you can kind of break some of the encounters a little bit. And I don't think people notice that because they're usually playing with that mode normally because it's, you know, quote unquote modern, it feels more natural. So I wonder if they'll be making any changes to things like layouts of the level design or anything like that, if they're going for kind of a more traditional camera system or like the modern version of a more traditional camera system, I guess. It's curious. Yeah.
Some of those screenshots, they look like one-to-one, like in like geometry and stuff like that. It's just like, you know, texture. So yeah. And like that isometric camera view, like, that's how like the routing of the enemy AI, and that's how like the pathing was all set up to be based around that. Yeah. So what you do break it when you throw it in 3D like that. So,
I don't think it's as bad as like Twin Snakes where, you know, you put MGS1 in Sons of Liberty's engine and, you know, tool set and all that. And it's, suddenly a significantly different experience. But
yeah, I was talking to somebody else about that the other day. The PS2 having pressure sensitive buttons, like to put your gun away, you could put it away without firing a shot. Yeah, but you could put it away without firing a shot in Metal Gear Solid 2. In the GameCube Twin Snakes, if you were in first person and you pulled it out, like you could not put it away without firing. You had to pull like the little item or weapon like menu, like open, unequip, and then re-equip trick just to even do that. And
it feels like you're doing something you're not supposed to be, and you're kind of like breaking it into submission a little bit. It's very strange.
Yeah, like I got past somebody, some QA person or somebody overlooking that, and was like, "Oh, whoops, how'd that happen?" Cool. Well, that's an answer, and I'm excited that it was recorded. Yeah, I mean, I swear, I put Peace Walker in my top three.
A lot of people do.
Yeah, and so that's interesting.
Like, I want to be clear. I get it. I see the appeal. Like, I understand. I'm not here out to, you know, throw a bunch of dog turds all over it or anything like that. It's just very, very much not my kind of loop. Man, the list of games that I've run into, and after like 20 minutes, been like, wait a minute, this is Monhun again. It's just so, like, it just goes on and on. It's like Lord of Arcana was the biggest one that hurt my heart. Go up on Moby Games sometimes, folks at home, and look up the names of all the people involved with that game, because holy smokes. It's like every big, like, Rockstar Japanese developer you've ever heard of is on this thing, and it's just like a weird little PSP game that no one cares about. Anyway, it's like that one was the big one that hurt, because like I wanted to play that game so bad. Then I got into it and I was like, I don't care. Final Fantasy Legend on 3DS is the same way, or whatever that one's called. Explorers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Legend is the Game Boy game that's not a Final
Fantasy. That's not a Final Fantasy. Yeah.
Saga, right? Or something like that.
Yeah. Cool. Well, I don't have an answer for that personally off the top of my head. So I'll have to say my least favorite Parappa the Rapper game in the Parappa the Rapper series is Parappa 2 on the PS2. But I love them all. It's just, I don't feel as personally attached to the music in that version. Jammer Lammy sets the bar high for me. And of course the original, you can't ever shake a stick at. But two, while loved and still would love to continue to replay that just as much as the others, it's just not as long lasting in my mind. So that is my answer for my least favorite in one of my
favorite.
I can't
remember the last time I fired up Parappa 2. No one ever talks about it. I don't even know why. It's not like it's bad or anything. It's,
not at all.
Was Matsuda still on that?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's the exact same team as what I believe.
Wow.
Well, cool. Well, thanks for another chat there, Andrew. Entertaining.
Thank you.
As always.
And sorry again.
I'm hurt, but I'm gonna be okay. Like it'll be fine. I'll survive. Like Metal Gear Survive.
Yep. That's
popping some Mentos, and I was like, whoa. I haven't seen anyone use those. Or
did he run through the airport, you know, like slide down an escalator to a flight that he almost missed? And
he sat down on a recently painted bench, and it looked like he was gonna really screw things up, but then he came up with a brilliant idea to kind of roll around in it and make the perfect pinstripes.
Yeah, so what is genius. So Mentos, dude, really, like, next to Red Bull, like, what other, you know, thing that can really lift a person up and change their chemistry to being a better human being?
Double mint gum, maybe. That one was pretty uplifting, I think.
Yeah. A lot of twins.
You probably
involved.
Had to be a twin, though, for that one. Though. You probably had to be a twin.
Yeah. That's the only way to unlock the powers on that one. All right. Well, welcome back to another episode, Austin.
Thank you.
To start things off, we'll do an icebreaker, which is what got us onto that rant. I'm going to probably keep into the episode. I mean, why not? But what is what's your favorite vehicle or mode of transportation in a video game?
Oh, whoa! Okay,
little yeah, cash. Just start off a little bit cash.
This was so hard, huh? Vehicle or mode of transportation in a video game. God, I don't know. It always catches me off guard. I don't know if it's probably maybe the it's one of a favorite, let's just say. But I think having a horse in a game is pretty fun. Like in Red Dead Redemption, that's got a good feel to it, cruising around, especially like the first Red Dead Redemption, I think.
Yeah.
Super fluid. Even on the second one, that felt pretty good too. That was always a bummer to lose a really good horse, you know, over a cliff or something.
Never want to lose a horse over a cliff. Yeah, it's always a sad day and a tough day because you got a long walk back from wherever you're going.
Yeah.
The horse is dead too. Of course. Yeah.
I'll go with that. That's one of my favorites at least.
Okay, cool. I've got a lot of Final Fight on the brain, so of course talking about horses as a direct tie to Final Fight.
The enemy that you fight, the guy named Horse?
No. There was an old 80s arcade game that Capcom made called Gunsmoke, like Gun.Smoke, whatever reason. And so when it came time to like kind of revitalize like some of their branding, like in the like later 90s, the idea to potentially do like a follow-up or like a reimagining of that game was happening. And so Capcom initially started development of Red Dead Revolver. It was a Capcom title. And as it was going through production, they even got like the artist from like Final Fight and Street Fighter 2. Like he was a long time like producer and planner for Capcom. He did artwork for the game, but ended up doing like, you know, with developmental difficulties and things, they partnered with Angel Studios, who then took over some development details of it. And then still more troubled production. Capcom abandoned it. Angel Studios was bought out by Rockstar and Take-Two. So then they acquired basically the IP from Capcom for that with the Angel Studios acquisition, because that's what they're currently making. And so that game did become a Rockstar game still, but it was a Capcom idea that kind of started it and stemmed from all that. And that's what it kind of became, like, you know, the follow-up. Sam Houser or Dan Houser, one of the Housers, really liked the game. And so after Revolver was released, you know, probably just still was murmuring in the back of his brain. So after one of the GTAs was like, oh, you know what? Let's do some cowboys. Let's go ahead and do a cowboy GTA. This will be fun. That's to water it down, you know, cowboy GTA. It's not necessarily cowboy GTA, but yeah.
That's cool. Well, I mean, yeah, it would have been, it is, I mean, it's kind of a cowboy GTA, but it was kind of cool when they had more than just GTA in that kind of sort of that formula, because then they had like LA Noir, which was cool, and Bully was not exactly the same, but had some elements of those types of games too.
Yeah, it had like Rockstar had like a, it was more of like they just had like an open world kind of like blueprint, but they can put a bunch of different kind of fun type of games into it, and it wasn't always just GTA. Yeah, like you said, there's even that game Manhunt. Remember that was like you kind of like stealth around and do try to like kill a certain number of people in an area and an environment, and that was semi, you know, open ish, not like a wide open world necessarily. But
yeah, they just did a better variety of games, because they also had not necessarily open world either, but they had like a State of Emergency, and then they had the very random Warriors licensed game, which was kind of like a cool thing.
Yeah, the Warriors
in history, you know.
State of Emergency, man. Smash the Corporation. I really wanted that game to be really good, and I pre-ordered it and bought it day one, and it was entertaining, but it was definitely like an arcade experience style of like influence, not just like an open like crime beat 'em up thing that I was kind of hoping for. But yeah, those
Smuggler's Run
on Midnight Club. I love those games. Those early aughts for Rockstar, you know, back when they put out games, you know, every couple of years, you know.
Yeah.
Not everyone's a decade or so, you know, as they do now, but when they do, it might do billions and billions of dollars over those decades.
Yeah.
All right. What were we going to talk about? Well, we were going to do the this question, which is, what is your least favorite game in your favorite franchise? So, yeah, I mean, I guess it doesn't have to be, I say these things, but it doesn't have to be your favorite franchise of all, but is there, if there's a franchise that you love, and then obviously saying your least favorite game isn't implying that, like, you think it's a bad game by any means, but, like, you know, I assume if you're a fan of a franchise, you probably do love them, like, warts and all, so it's just kind of interesting probably to hear, like, what the one maybe you like the least. But, yeah, what's that franchise, and what's that game?
Yeah, I'll just go with the first that comes to mind. Obviously, a big Legend of Zelda fan, so I'll go with that as the series. I think I'll exclude though. This will be like more least favorite sort of like mainline Zelda game. I'm not going to count like the DS, 3DS titles and stuff. And so I used to go back and forth a little bit on it until I recently played. They did a Skyward Sword like remaster that was kind of reworked to not include like the motion controls and stuff on Switch. And I actually enjoyed it pretty good. It kind of redeemed it a little bit for me. Probably still ranks a little bit on the lower end for like those sort of mainline Zelda games. But the one I'm going to go with, I think for some people, especially like depending on their age, this is one that they really like. I've come to find out.
I think there's a hot take incoming here, but let's see.
I don't know if it's a hot take necessarily, but it might be. I'm going with it though. I'm going to go with The Legend of Zelda: Twilight Princess.
Ooh, TP.
I think some people really like it. I found, like I said, a specific age group, but I think for me, like, they had done Ocarina of Time, Majora's Mask, Wind Waker, and then now we get to this fourth one that's basically following the same kind of formula that the previous three had done. And so I was pretty much getting fatigued at that point, even being a huge fan of that like formula. It was kind of getting, it was wearing a little thin for me, for one. And I was one of the people that actually really liked the art style that they went with for Wind Waker.
Yeah.
And so I felt like it was, I don't know. It might not be true. Nintendo kind of tends to do their own thing, but it did sort of, to me, feel like they were just responding to the backlash of people wanting like this supposedly like mature Zelda game where it's like, I mean,
yeah, Legend I feel like Zelda's
a goofy series. It's not meant to be this dark, you know, in my opinion, kind of a thing. And so I didn't really care for the art. So I think it actually has, they did an HD remaster on the Wii U that I guess looks halfway decent, but it looks, to me, it looks muddy and it hasn't aged well, like appearance wise. And then the gameplay to me, I mean, it probably would be something worth revisiting. I'm kind of going strictly on my sort of memories of it. But yeah, if you want to play Zelda in that formula, you've got, in my opinion, three better options. That came before it. So
I feel like there is some truth though to the Nintendo's response in making Twilight Princess that way, because like I think it was like initially the Wind Waker response was, no, we want like the tech demo we saw, we want this more mature Zelda, we want this like, you know, graphically like detailed and next gen Zelda. And so like it's not like the Nintendo could just overnight like cook something up. So I think they just went through the development and they had to like do like, you know, R&D and like, you know, concept it all out and craft it and write it and everything. So I think, you know, once that ball started like kind of rolling, like they had to kind of stick with it. And for good or bad, I mean, it still ended up, I think, being a solid title overall for the franchise. You know, I think, you know, there's, it has its fans, like you mentioned, like, but yeah, Wind Waker was one that, like, I think it was just the initial reaction wasn't even a reflection of the quality of the game. It was just, this isn't what I was expecting. But then once people actually settled down with it and played it, they realized, like, oh no, this is just a really good game. Like, this is super awesome, like, Zelda game and everything. And so I don't think there is, like, fan outcry or, like, disappointment in Wind Waker at all. I think at this point now, especially in, like, a modern lens, like, that's just generally, like, a beloved title in the series. So it's weird that they did shift gears back, because I would either want them to have done something entirely different, like, after Wind Waker, like, cool, we'll do something completely different. But instead, it did feel like it was more grounded in that Ocarina and Majora's, like, you know, aesthetic, you know, type of thing. I've been listening to the this other podcast, Into the Aether,
I've listened to like a couple of those, I think.
Yeah, it's a really good podcast. I mean, if I'm plugging podcasts on my podcast, I'm plugging that podcast. but they've actually talked a lot about Twilight Princess recently, because they did this like big bonus episode on like games of the decade, and they did 2000 to 2010. And then they did a GameCube bonus episode where they just kind of talked about their favorite GameCube games. So in two different episodes, I've heard them kind of talk about their love for Twilight Princess. There are a lot of ties, like thematically and like narratively, that do connect it to Ocarina Majora, which is interesting. How like Wind Waker is the one kind of shoehorn in there, and so like I wonder like how received it would be if they, or it would have been if they switched the release order and put Twilight Princess first as the first GameCube one, to like satisfy what everyone wanted to, and then released Wind Waker, you know, still maybe with some initial surprise, but like ultimately, like, you know, fans I think would enjoy it. But yeah, it's just interesting. Yeah. What do you think if you were 5 years younger and Twilight Princess was your first significant like Zelda game, like could you see like the mechanics in the game that is there potentially like nostalgically like holding that one in a higher standard?
I mean, I think so, because a lot of the big, you know, moments in the game are pretty similar to, or have a lot of similarities, at least for me, to Ocarina of Time. And so if that was your first, like, big 3D Zelda game, and, you know, your first kind of time maybe playing a game in it, you know, whatever kind of genre that fits into, I think that if I was, like, 10 or 12 years old, and that was, like, the first, whoa, like, 3D Zelda game or something, I probably would have been pretty blown away, but having already gone through, you know, it's just not, it doesn't have the same kind of impact having played a pretty similar game. I mean, maybe Majora's Mask is different enough, but at least Ocarina of Time, and then even Wind Waker, I mean, gameplay wise there's a formula there, right?
Yeah. Interesting.
But yeah, I think that's why I can definitely understand like a certain age of people being like, whoa, this is like the best Zelda ever. But I also personally didn't really care for like turning into a wolf. Like they didn't really do much for me. It was okay. But
yeah, it was better. It was done better in Sonic Unleashed, or what was the Crash game? There was a Crash game where I think where you turn into like a werewolf type of thing too.
There was actually. What was that?
Yeah, I don't remember the name. Crash Unleashed, maybe. I don't know. But Sonic Unleashed, you turned into a werewolf as well. So it was of the era.
You were the wolf, yeah.
But oh, you're thinking of you're thinking of Okami.
The famous Capcom game.
Yeah, Okami, the wolf-faced Zelda title.
But it's interesting, too, because they have, like, Wind Waker as, like, the more interesting art style. They do Twilight Princess. And then Skyward Sword, they kind of switch it back up again. And then from there, just kind of do what they want to, it seems. They haven't really gone back to that super, whatever, dark-looking style again, which is good, in my opinion.
But, I mean, they could do something cool with it, I think, you know, like... Yeah, I don't know. I just think that Nintendo's one of those ones that, like, yes, I will complain about it when it's not exactly what I want necessarily, but, you know, they've tried and true, like, will not do what the fans demand of them. They're going to do what they kind of want to do, and, like, the track record kind of shows. I mean, they're pretty, you know, 90% or better probably success rate of just releasing a good game, whether you wanted it or not, you know?
Yeah. I am curious. I wish they would have ported that HD, like, Wii U one that they put out to Switch, because then I probably could have replayed it and probably been a lot less fatigued on, like, that style of a Zelda game, and maybe had just a fresh kind of lens on it. Maybe would have enjoyed it more, but just, you know, shooting from the hip a little bit, that one doesn't really have a great memory for me.
Did you play it on GameCube or Wii when you first played it? Because that was that like late GameCube release that also was like Wii launch title.
I played it on Wii.
Okay, because you also famously, I mean, everybody knows this, but you famously played Breath of the Wild on the Wii U.
I did, yeah. That was a conscious decision where I was like, well, I think this is probably going to be more of a rarity. I'm going to get this one, you know. I don't know why I just decided to do that, you know.
That's one of those things too. Nintendo isn't necessarily pushing the envelope on like cutting edge technology, and like you got this inferior version of it. Like it was designed and developed to be fully playable on that system. I mean, you even have like the Sheikah Slate or whatever that's supposed to look like the Wii U gamepad. Yeah,
yeah.
In game,
I think that whole Twilight Princess thing might have kind of informed my decision to get the previous gen version. to be honest with you, because I do remember playing Twilight Princess on Wii and kind of being like, I mean, yeah, the commercials make it look like you're going to be swinging this remote around like a sword, but you're just kind of flicking your wrist doing stuff. So it's like, it didn't really do much for me in that way.
And that also inverted the entire game. It mirrored everything.
And the handedness.
Because Link is left-handed, but most players were right-handed. And if you're going to hold the Wii remote, it wanted it to match. So they didn't just flip the character model. The entire game is so, like, if you the strategy guide makers, you know, if they wrote a GameCube strategy guide, they had to now say, instead of going left, no, go right through this doorway and everything. The whole game was smart.
That had to have been really confusing, because I know the strategy guide writers, or at least on IGN, are horrible about, like, directions, like east, west, north, south. I don't know how many times I've noticed this. I go through the west door, it's the east door. I'm like, no, this is completely backwards. But I guess it's a tough job, so I'm not going to...
They could be playing, like, earlier builds of it, too, where they do flip things, too, potentially. Who knows?
It's happened a lot of times. I don't know. It's happened a lot of times.
Lacking. IGN crew's lacking. All right. Well, that was a cool answer. Yeah. I don't know that I have one per se. You know what I will do? I'll plug my Patreon. I did a bonus episode where I ranked the Metal Gear Solid games in order from my least favorite to most favorite. So if you join one of the paid tiers I have, the $3 or $6 tiers on Patreon, the link in the show description below, you can listen to that bonus episode and get my opinion on my least favorite game and one of my favorite.
Sweet.
Cool. Well, thanks a lot, Austin. I think that I'll kind of wrap that episode here. That was a fun convo.